And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning, and it's now time for Green Side Up. And joining me on the phone this morning is Jesse Gilmore. And Jesse, good morning. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. Thank you for joining us on the phone today. And Wendy Powell is actually right outside studio, and she's going to be coming into studio here in just a minute. But we'll go ahead and start with you first, Jesse. And this morning, first thing we're going to talk about is taking care of houseplants while having them inside for the winter season.
Yes. So there's quite a few things to keep in mind in order to keep your houseplants healthy, and we can kind of run down them in order. The first and most important thing to think about is watering. Watering houseplants is the number one reason why they succeed or fail, especially during the winter. People have a tendency to overwater houseplants, and that causes a lot of problems and can even lead to the eventual death of plants, particularly if, like a lot of people, people go for succulents. Succulents are plants that have special growth patterns to retain moisture for longer. So plants like aloe, hen and chicks, echeveria, jade plant, things like that, where you have very fleshy leaves and stems, they're designed to hold water in for longer, so they don't need as much watering as other plants would. So you definitely don't want to overwater. Watering too frequently can lead to problems like root rot, so you want to make sure that you're watering just the right amount to meet the plant's needs without adding too much and inviting potential diseases. The way that you tell if your plant needs water is basically sticking your finger into the top inch of potting mix. Typically, it's not going to be soil on indoor plants, but rather a soilless potting mix bought from a garden center or nursery. To determine the moisture level, maybe inch and a half or 2 inches. And if that is dry, then watering that. You can water it in two different ways. You can water it from the top down, which is, I think, how most people water traditionally. That's basically just pouring the water on top of the potting mix and letting it drain down into whatever saucer or pan is underneath the bottom and allowing it to drain out. However, there is also a technique where you put the bottom of the container that the plant is in into a water source and let the water move upward through the potting mix profile. And once it gets to the top, then you know that it is saturated, and then you let it dry out into a saucer or pan like before. That's a better way to get thorough watering of the soil or the potting mix without actually overwatering. And you want to make sure that you are watering consistently, because too little water is also a good way to kill the plant. Houseplants that aren't succulents are quite particular about their water needs. But that is the number one way to keep your plants healthy throughout the winter. One other thing to keep in mind when it comes to indoor plants is the amount of light that they get. Plants, especially plants that are brought in from outside for the winter months, are stressed out by the movement into a lower light source or a less intense light source. And if they're brought down into a low intensity light too quickly, their leaves can turn yellow. There's actually some fascinating research done by the University of Florida back in the 70s that talks about tropical plants and that are used as houseplants, that they have actually two different types of leaves depending on their light source. They've got sun leaves and they've got shade leaves. Sun leaves are leaves that are smaller but more numerous and have less chlorophyll because the light they're in is more intense. so that the leaves do not get overstimulated. And the shade leaves are on plants that are grown in lower intensity light or in shade, kind of dappled light situations. And they have larger leaves that are less numerous but with more chlorophyll. And as you bring plants inside for the winter, you're transferring it into a lower intensity light situation. So what the plant tends to do is it tends to shed the sun leaves and produce shade leaves. However, it doesn't need to shed these leaves if it is brought into lower intensity light in steps. So if you're bringing plants inside for the winter, you want to make sure that the plants are kept in high-intensity light areas to start, and then you can kind of walk them down into lower or reflected light in steps. So you would want to put these newly indoor plants in southern windows, especially during the afternoon, to get the direct sunlight from the sun, which will be lower in the southern sky.
All right. So, go ahead. I thought you were done.
No, I was wondering if you had any questions about that. It's a lot to take in. Houseplants are pretty tricky in that you have to juggle all of these different things in an environment that not a ton of plants really do well in.
Right. Some people get fake plants, you know, just because they look good all year because you don't have to do anything with them. But with real ones. But like you said, one of the best places is to obviously put it by the window so it can at least get some kind of sunlight while being inside. But would you say that moving it maybe like, you know, because obviously since the sun goes from the east to the west, moving it from one side of the house to the other, or just keep it, or is it best to just kind of keep it in the same spot where it does still get some sunlight for some parts of the day?
You don't have to move it with the sun, honestly. That will kind of help bring it down from its high-intensity light situation that it was in before. As long as it's getting that direct light. One thing you want to be careful of, especially if putting plants near windows, is potential nighttime draft. Areas near windows can get pretty drafty in the cold of the night, and plants that are particularly sensitive to temperature fluctuations might need to be moved away from windows during the night in order to protect them from cold snaps. But that is really the only thing. If you are transferring plants to lower light situations, it's going to take probably 3 to 6 weeks to get them situated in a low-light environment effectively, so that the leaves that they have on the plant don't shed and can instead transfer effectively to shade leaves instead of sun leaves.
All right, so that's just a few tips there to kind of keep your houseplants that are inside to kind of help them keep thriving. And another thing that you wanted to bring up was talking about foraging.
Yes, so I've mentioned, I believe, on previous sessions with you that I am an avid forager. I love going out and looking for my own food in wild places, and that could be anywhere from my yard to the forests of some state parks in the area. And I love foraging. I view it as a very social activity. And the University of Nebraska-Lincoln is doing a study on the motives and methods of foragers. And that's kind of exciting to me because I know that not a lot of research has been done on foraging. And so it's a good opportunity to see how and why people forage and continue providing opportunities for people who do forage. So we promoted that study that is open until December 21st on our Facebook page. And I would just like to ask anyone listening, if they have done any foraging, it doesn't have to be intense, it doesn't have to be often, but if you have ever looked for wild foods that, you know, were not intentionally grown, to fill out that survey and kind of help out the graduate students at the University of Nebraska with their research project, because as a grad student myself, or as a previous grad student myself, I'm very aware that sometimes it's hard to get, respondents for your surveys. I filled out the survey myself, and I'm looking forward to seeing and kind of sharing the research and the results that they find when they go through all the data.
All right, so that's going to be a pretty cool study that will be coming out. Well, Jesse, I know you couldn't be in studio today, but we're going to go ahead and let you go so you don't have to hang on the phone the whole time. But if anybody would like to get a hold of you about what you've talked about today or anything else, how can they get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me at my office at 620-724-8233. Or by email at jr637@ksu.edu.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jesse. I appreciate you coming on today, man, and you have a good day.
Thank you.
All right. And joining me in studio is Wendy Powell. And good morning, Wendy. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you here for a few weeks, so it's good to see you.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Good to see you, too.
All right. Well, what we're going to do, we're just going to kind of preview what you're going to talk about in the next segment, and we'll have you on the other side of the segment, and you'll have that all to yourself. But so what will you be talking about today?
I am so excited to talk about this. It's a project that's been on my radar for quite a long time now. We are doing a pasture and a crop lease survey. So we're going to be wanting to collect information from folks that are leasing pasture land or crop land. So we're going to gather all of this data so that we can provide some more informed answers to the people that are calling us. So be on the lookout for that. And I also do have a couple of meetings to announce, and I'll go ahead and preview those.
Okay.
On December 15th, which is next Tuesday, I believe, we're going to do a farm succession planning meeting. So that'll be, there's in-person options and virtual options that will be really interesting. And also our 4-H agent in Wilson County, Cherry Nelson, will be doing a crafting meeting. Crafting for our little 4-H explorers. So those are going to be our 7 and under kiddos. And that's going to happen on December 23rd at 11 a.m. She's going to do that online. So anybody with little kids that want to explore 4-H, Cherry Nelson will be online December 23rd. That'll be a great opportunity for them to learn a little bit about that.
All right. And that will be coming up on the second part of the show today. And we look forward to that. But let's go ahead and take a break. But when we come back, we'll have news at the top of the hour. And then we will continue Greenside Up after that. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this beautiful day in southeast Kansas. Right now, 33 degrees, going to hit around 70 today.
This time of year, Green Acres Garden Center could be called Poinsettias Are Us. Holiday plants and green.
And welcome back to Greenside Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. We had Jesse Gilmore for the first part of the show today. And joining us for our second part of the show today is Wendy Powell. And Wendy, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Kyle?
Doing pretty good. Good to have you back in studio. I know it's been a few weeks since we've seen you. And today you're going to be talking about pasture leasing surveys, but also there's a few programs that are also going on pretty fun programs coming up.
Yeah, so the farm transition meeting, farm succession planning, that meeting is coming up next Tuesday evening, December 15th. And that's just going to be an hour-long program, so it'll fit nicely into an evening. We're going to have Lavelle Windsor speaking to us virtually, but we do have some in-person locations if folks want to join us for some networking more in-person. We are going to provide dinner. Three different locations, so Hepler at the community center there in Hepler, and then the Oswego Community Center at the fairgrounds. And then I'll be hosting a location at Fredonia at the courthouse in the basement there. So dinner provided for those. If you want to RSVP for those locations, the phone number to call is our Girard office, 620-724-8233. And of course, you can also join us virtually for those meetings. Check out our Facebook page there for that information. There's some QR codes or some direct links, or call that phone number and we can certainly send you the connection information for that meeting. So again, farm succession planning December 15th at 6 p.m. and call 620-724-8233 for that meeting. And then also our 4-H agent in Wilson County, Cherry Nelson, is going to be doing a crafting program on December 23rd at 11 a.m. for all of the exploring 4-H little kids under age 7 that are interested in joining 4-H. You can learn a little bit about how that program works and make a craft, too. So she'll be getting those kits ready to go. If you're interested in doing a craft with Cherry, then certainly check out the Facebook page. There's an event set up there. You have lots of information, and that program will be done virtually, so anybody can join that.
And that'll be a lot of fun for the kiddos. So
yes, maybe somebody else directing their craft rather than mom or dad.
Yeah, and said, "Mom, Dad, can you tell me?" Okay. And plus, kids like to watch TV anyway, so that'll be fun for them. So
yeah, it should be pretty good.
All right. So again, that's just a couple programs that are going on. And Wendy, though, let's go ahead and get to your main subject on the day is pasture leasing surveys.
Yeah, one of my biggest questions, most often occurring questions that come across my desk is how much do pastures go for? And this is never a straight answer of, you know, a certain dollar figure per acre per year. I always have more questions to ask than answer. So whenever someone calls me wanting to know what pasture is leasing for in my area or in their area, I always have to ask, you know, what type of forage is it? What's the fencing like? What's the watering system like? Who's going to be the main caretaker of the animals on that pasture lease? K-State does lots of different surveys. And here in Southeast Kansas, we have a pretty low respondent rate to those surveys. So the information that I have available to me, while it's correct and accurate, I feel like that we could do a little better. And so Wildcat District is implementing a pasture lease survey program that is going to go live any day now. I've got that email drafted and it's going to be sent out very soon, and we'll be collecting data on pasture leases through January 11th, and we're going to be talking about that information on January 23rd. So we're going to summarize the programs or the pasture lease agreements that are in our area and share that information with producers. So anybody that is leasing pastures in Montgomery, Wilson, Labette, or Crawford counties, please take the time to fill out that survey. It should take about 8 minutes. Questions like, the first one is, how many pastures do you lease? Then we're going to go into the different watering systems, who manages each different part of the pasture lease agreement, you know, who takes care of the fences, what about pasture fertilization, things like that. And I will tell you that most of the questions are multiple choice, and there are a few fill in the blank questions, but they're very simple, usually just a number. So it's not an intense survey or anything like that. We are also doing a crop survey that's going to be right along these same lines. So there's lots of farmers that lease crop land, and so we want to explore some of those agreements as well. So there's questions like who takes care of some of the inputs, some of the demographics of the landowner and the tenant, things like that. So we're just getting some more drilled down data for our area so that we can really answer y'all's questions better. So if you know of someone that is leasing pasture or cropland, please let them know that this program is going on. The survey will be available on our website, on our Facebook page, and if you would like a hard copy, you can certainly call the office in Labette County. The Altamont Extension office is 620-724-5337, and we'll mail you out a hard copy with a pre-stamped envelope so you can send that back to us. So there's certainly lots of different ways you can answer the survey. We appreciate online surveys. That way we don't have to input the data ourselves.
Right. But it's pretty automatic.
That's right. But we certainly want to include everyone on this. And there's lots of different demographics out there. So we understand that internet viability is lacking in some areas. So we certainly want to not exclude anyone. So if you know of someone that would be willing to answer this survey, or if you want to and you're not seeing it, please give us a call. A lot of producers have my direct cell phone number. That please call me. I'll make sure you can get those surveys. But just be looking through your emails and watch out for that. So that data will be all compiled together when we get all of those answers. We're going to be looking at them, and we're going to have this meeting on January 23rd. So I don't have a lot of details. I would love to give you the date and the time and location, but with COVID going on the way it is,
you never know.
That's right. Things are kind of up in the air, but we are looking at January 23rd as a pasture or crop lease survey meeting and talk about the legalities of leasing land for different uses and summarize this data. So we'll be able to tell you, 80% of the folks that responded to the survey have this type of agreement or whatnot. This type of survey has been done in several districts across the state of Kansas, and lots of different folks find it useful. Ag lenders, producers that are looking for information on leasing their own pastures, or landowners, different ways of doing something. If you have a pasture that you're trying to lease, but your agreement's not quite working out the way you thought it would, this might give some insight on some other ways to do things. So there's not necessarily a right or a wrong, but for the number of pasture leases there are, that's how many agreements there are.
Wow.
So many different ways of doing things, or how many just whatever works for two different people. And everybody has a different work schedule and lifestyle. So there's so many different types of agreements. And this is going to kind of just give us some more information about our area locally.
All right, so that's going to be some good stuff coming up on that pasture leasing survey. And this is just me because I've lived in the city all my life. I had no idea that actually took place until we started actually getting calls on open line saying, "Hey, I was wanting to know, I'm looking for somebody to lease their pasture so I can put my cattle on their pasture." And I had no idea anything like that even existed. And it's actually pretty interesting to hear about.
Yeah. So it's something that has been done forever. So let's say that I had land, but I don't have any critters to put on it. And so I might, some people just like to look at their land or just hunt on it or whatnot. It's another way to make a little bit of profit by bringing in some animals to graze. Some of it could be for aesthetics. They just like to see, cows out there grazing and little babies. That's great. Or some people on the flip side might have animals to graze, but no land to do it on, or not enough land. It's a business. And so you have to look at all of your inputs. And so leasing pasture land or crop land is just a way to expand a business without having a lot of risk associated with ownership. So it's kind of like leasing your house. Whenever you're renting, you're not paying the property taxes.
Right. You get a producer or two people decide to come together, make an agreement. Are those usually done by written contracts, handshake contracts, oral contracts? How's that work out? And are they all legal at that point?
Sure. That's a great question, Kyle. And that's actually one of our questions on the survey. Is this contract written or oral? And so, and of course, handshake contracts are also oral, and they can be legal. There's lots of different ways to interpret the laws around this, and that's one of the things that we'll be talking about on January 23rd. So, of course, your solid agreements are going to be written. Anytime that it's written down, of course, it's going to be more legitimate.
Right. It protects both sides pretty
much. Correct. Yes. And a written contract will usually go into more detail about things that might pop up. So a written contract might include things about hunting. If it's a grazing lease, things about hunting, or things about, the landowner going camping out there, for instance, and making for sure they shut the gate, or, there's lots of different ways that those can be completed. But handshake or oral contracts are also incredibly common here. I would say that there's probably more oral contracts than written in our area, Kyle. And that's simply because it's the nature of agriculture.
Right.
We're neighborly. We're friendly. People like to just go on about their business, and having a printer handy to sign something is not always the easiest way to do things. And but things can get really difficult. I've had a few conversations with folks saying, you know, the person that usually manages this pasture lease or whatever has passed away or is no longer involved in the business. And then that leaves somebody else that is generally uninformed in charge of something that they're unfamiliar with.
Right.
And so feelings get hurt. And I talked to one lady, her husband had passed away. Actually, this has been probably three different conversations, three different ladies, but it's the same story. You know, my husband usually manages the pasture and he has recently passed away. And now I don't know what to do with this. And so we really have to take a step back and go all the way back to the beginning, figure out, you know, what has been done. And most of the time, the tenant will, of course, be familiar and sympathetic and not try to hoodwink, you might say, the landowner. But then there are those people that, you know, you're kind of suspicious of.
Right.
So it's just that written contract is so handy for passing things on. And hey, we're going to probably talk about that in the farm transition meeting next Tuesday night.
All right. That sounds good. So lots of great stuff there for us, Wendy. And if anybody would like to get a hold of you about this survey and also what you will be talking about next Tuesday night, how can they get a hold of you?
I can be reached at the Altamont Extension Office, 620-784-5337.
Believe me, I do that all the time with my own phone number because yes. I just don't say it that much. I actually start forgetting my own phone number. Sometimes I'm like, hold on, was that? That's right.
Yes. I'm also, my email is Wendy, W-E-N-D-I-E, Powell, P as in Paul, O-W-E-L-L at KSU.edu. So a phone number or an email, a great way to get a hold of me.
All right, Wendy. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. We really do appreciate it. And you have a great day and be safe out there.
Thank you. You too, Kyle.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we will have open line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.